You had spoken last year about Spike maybe taking a half step back, wanting to be competitive this year. Why do you think it hasn't sort of unfolded the way that you envisioned it over the offseason?
You know, it's a variability of human performance, right? You can write it down on paper, but then you got to play the games. You know, frankly, we haven't really put it all together for a consistent period of time. And so, you know, I still think that can happen. You know, listen, there's a lot of good ball players on this club. It's just a question of, you know, getting a little confidence, getting on a run. And I think that's possible. And so, it's, you know, how many games are left in the season? 100? It's a lot. Okay, so, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, we'll see what, you know, it looks like 4 to 6 weeks from now. But, you know, I still feel this team has got a good run in them, a lot of good players, and a lot of good, I think the locker room's good, the culture's good. And so I'm hopeful.
Slow roller in front of the plate. There's one. There's two. And the Mets win. The Mets hold on and win 6-5. What a play by Torrens as he turns a 2-3 double play to end it.
Wow, what a great play. And, you know, he had to do it all on his own. He had to be able to get there, get back, and get in a position to throw, but didn't have time to set the angle where you might hit the runner in the back. So he had to make the accurate throw and rely on Alonso to get the scoop on there.
Jeff got a little hairy there at the end, but I would expect nothing less with this rivalry, right?
Yeah, we always play them tough. They're a good ball club over there. You know, they got us yesterday, but, you know, we're able to pull this one out today.
What does this mean to get this win against that team on this stage?
Yeah, it means a lot. You know, you don't want to come over here and lose two, so to be able to come back today and win one, you know, we're happy with that.
What did the last few days out of the lineup for you do for you today?
You know, it just motivates me. You know, I'm out here every single day trying to be the best player I can. You know, last week was tough for me. We also faced four straight lefties, which is, you know, not too common, but was able to get in there against the righty today. And, you know, Mendy having the confidence in me to, you know, face those two lefties there and, you know, get some hits.
This game was almost like a microcosm of the season. You guys had to overcome adversity. How does this win the possibility of maybe using this as a springboard of some sort?
Yeah, you know, we played some good baseball in Washington. You know, we were able to sweep them. So, you know, to win this one is huge. You know, we're able to, you know, have a happy flight back to, you know, the U.S. and, you know, keep it rolling.
Lastly, what's it going to feel like to get back home?
It's going to be a long trip home, but, you know, happy to get home, happy to see the kid, and, you know, it should be fun.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, June the 9th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets Podcast, the London series edition of the show. An exciting Sunday morning, breakfast and baseball. I could get used to this. I mean, you get up at 10 a.m., you watch a ball game by 1:30. The game is over, you're on with your day, a beautiful summer day here in New York, and away you go. So I could get used to breakfast and baseball. I'm not so sure the players will be as cool with it, especially if it was East Coast time, U.S. East Coast time. But anyway, a dramatic ending. Luis Torrens has been making an impact, ironically, on the same day that Steve Cohen, who was out in London, had mentioned him as, you know, a pickup or the kind of decision-making that the Mets have turned the corner to a certain degree and being made on for just $100,000. And it looks like, and I'll probably write about this over Beyond the Mic, looks like Torrens is about to win the backup catcher's job. And I'll tell you what, with the way he receives behind the plate and if his bat, and he had a decent year a couple of years ago in Seattle, he has some pop. You know, even if he's slightly league average or slightly above league average, Torrens is a guy that, over a larger sample size, might just be pushing himself into a starting job, if not here, somewhere else. I know with Alvarez coming back, that's unlikely, but you know, someone's got a DH too, and who knows what the future of J.D. Martinez is as you get closer and closer to the deadline. So joining me in just a little bit, I had the privilege of being a guest earlier in the week to preview the London series, Mets-Phillies, with Anthony Wooten, Transatlantic Sports Podcast, and the segment will be in the second half of the show. And really what we're going to be focusing on there, rather than getting into the weeds with Anthony about the Mets and the series and specifically about the games, but more about how baseball is being received in London. Look, I know everybody in this audience who's a Mets fan hates Chase Utley, but if you listen to him on the broadcast this morning on ESPN with Michael Kay and Glanville and the crew, he talked about as an ambassador there in Europe to the game, the how the game is starting to make some inroads. And I think in talking to Anthony, finding out his perspective as someone who covers sports over in the UK, someone who has young kids who are sports fans and obviously are growing up outside of the United States without baseball being part of their DNA, how can this series, which seemed to generate so much excitement, a huge crowds, well over 100,000 over the 2 days, over 50,000 each day, the energy that appeared to be the case from watching at home, how can baseball leverage this, improve upon it, and continue to help the game grow in a similar fashion that we saw the NBA do it back in the late 80s, early 90s, how the NFL year over year continues to expand and grow their London series and trying to get a foothold in Europe. So that'll be kind of our back half of the show focus. But before we get to Anthony in a little bit, and talk about the game and how the Mets and Phillies played a piece in what hopefully is a larger conversation about the marketing of the game, let's just see where this Mets team is at. So, you know, you guys know I've been on the record, ever since they've really taken that May dive, you know, losing, what, 19 of 26. Any team that loses 19 of 26 clearly is not serious about competing for anything. And when the Mets have gone bad over the last decade, They've always had that 1 month where everything falls apart and they play like the old narrative is, like the 62 Mets. And that's how the Mets played in May. And specifically, I think it starts and ends with the guy that's missing, that was out rehabbing in Brooklyn this weekend and who helped contribute to a number of those losses in May, Edwin Diaz, who was the heart, the soul, the fabric of that 2022 team that won 101 games. When he came in and the trumpets played, the game is over. You know, the Mets don't have that anymore. They don't have that invincibility out of the pen. Everybody's kind of been pushed up a little bit. Not much different than last year. And you saw it again this Sunday with, you know, how Reed Garrett, who struggled ever since, he's been put into some higher leverage situations. Maybe he's turning into a pumpkin and they're figuring him out as he goes around the league. You know, Drew Smith, who's always been hot and cold, making a big pitch. And really, that ninth inning was made by Torrens, who made a great athletic play at behind the plate while he had a runner bearing down on him and taking him out and may have hurt him a little bit. And, you know, nice play at Pete at first to complete the double play. But, you know, with not having Diaz in the ninth inning, the Mets, who have really been following the blueprint, yeah, they're not getting great starting pitching every night. You saw that they didn't get any good starting pitching in this series in London. Manaea and Quintana were both very bad. But, you know, right now, seeing the progress of some of the kids down on the farm, the return of Christian Scott, how Peterson and McGill have come back and have been pretty good. You know, not great, but pretty good since they came back. Starting pitching should not be, although they don't have the same dominant front end like the Phillies with Ranger Suarez and Zach Wheeler, starting pitching shouldn't be the harbinger of doom or a problem for them. You know, I think the bullpen, which has come back down to earth, maybe because a little bit of the overuse or lack of Diaz cementing the ninth and guys getting pushed up into higher leverage situations. You know, the bullpen, I think, is passable, but really needs that closer in the ninth inning to anchor it all. And all of a sudden, the offense, which has been so inconsistent with all these core players performing below what you would expect out of them. It's starting to come around. I mean, Lindor is starting to resemble Lindor. Alonso's better, not where you want him to be. McNeil, a couple of hits. Maybe the benching and the specter of a veteran, a guy that's a 4A guy at this point in his career, Jose Iglesias, taking his job and doing a pretty good job of taking it from him. Put a little pressure on McNeil. J.D. Martinez, always the professional hitter, coming through today. And, you know, Nimmo started to come around. So, in general, you know, you insert Vientos into the situation and how he's played, all of a sudden you're starting to see a little bit, more so on the road, and let's face it, whether they were considered the home team or the away team, they're on the road in London the last couple of days. Less so at Citi Field. They'll be back, you know, in Citi Field this week, and we'll see how that goes. But, you know, they are coming around. Now, we talked about, after the sweep in Washington, over at Beyond the Mic, Talking Mets Beyond the Mic, the newsletter, I talked about false hope, and I talked about the math that needed to happen. And whether you're a subscriber or not, I'll share with you. Basically, the Mets need to get to about 85 wins. And you could do this math. This is not some big secret. About a 580 winning percentage. And in order to get to 580, that's about a 94 win pace between the point of beating, you know, the day after they beat Washington to complete the sweep till the end of the year. They've got to play at that pace. They've given themselves no margin of error. They've pretty much thrown that away with how they played in the month of May. And with them being 8 games under 500, even though they're only a couple of games out of the wild card, there's a certain amount of fool's gold that I feel comes with where the Mets are right now. And this is a really interesting time because clearly Cohen, if you listen to his comments and if you heard those who are pretty much close to the team, the Martinos of the world, Cohen is not ready to wave the white flag. You also are starting to wonder, because it's already the feelers are out there through the media. Teams are looking at the Mets roster, ready to pillage it, but I'm not so sure they're ready to give up anything of value for that pillaging. And if you have an owner, unlike the prior ownership, that's not that concerned about saving money. Now, that's a speculation. He's never said either way, but his behavior, the fact that he allows the Mets to go out and grab Torrens, who may have just been, if he didn't play that well, a weak stopgap for a catcher that was making $7 million this year that they dropped and are going to eat that salary. So, you know, that behavior indicates that, yeah, Cohen's not afraid to lose money. It's very likely that if the Mets are in that weird, which is the worst case scenario, a contender on paper, couple of games out of the wild card, but not really in it when you start to look at the bones of the roster. And if you say, okay, you get into the wild card and your reward is to face the Phillies or the Dodgers, whoever finishes with, you know, potentially the second best record there. Or maybe, you know, if you advance, of course, or you go and you face Milwaukee or a team that's playing well, you know, is that really a reward? And, you know, I think when it comes down to it, Cohen is looking at it where the farm system is improving. You know, you have now 6 guys in the top 100. The pitching in the farm system is improving. Acuna's turning it around, maybe knocking at the door. We haven't seen Gilbert at all this year. He's been injured. But Acuna, who's looking like this Jose Reyes energizer bunny, is knocking on the door. There's some other arms down there on the farm. I think they have a number of bullpen arms that they could pull from, if not this year, going into next year. And some of the offensive players are a little bit lower down the rung, you know, high A, low A, you know, things like that. But they're coming. You know, he says to himself, look, I could hold on to these guys, try to have the best record possible if I don't get the return that I want. And, you know, if you lose an Alonso in free agency, you're going to get the draft pick potentially, assuming they don't go out and give it away by signing somebody else. And that's a conversation for another day. So they're in this spot where, and it's ironic that it's very similar to 2019. But in 2019, I was more adamant about them pushing through it because they had DeGrom, they had Syndergaard. They wound up going out and getting Stroman. They had Wheeler. And I said, they have this pitching that won't be there. You know, Mats was on that team. They have this pitching that won't be there forever. You know, my attitude has changed because you look at this roster, you see Alonso on a free agent deal. You know, a lot of the starters are guys that are fungible. The veterans anyway, Quintana's and Mania's, and very likely won't be here in a couple of years. You know, the kids are what you have your focus on, and not all of them will be called up this year. So you're really looking towards the future. And look, Lindor and Nimmo are going to be here. They've got big contracts. They're still relatively young. It's not like you have to win now and their skills going to erode. But the rest of the offense, there's nobody on here that you have to leverage their time in uniform and say you got to go for it now. Now, this is where it gets tricky. Because even if you go out and play 580 baseball, they got 17 more games left in June. That's about 10-7. The Mets are going to go into the 4th of July weekend somewhere between 3 and 5 games under 500, which is still under 500, which by the criteria that this show and pretty much anybody who watches baseball with any kind of common sense, until you're 500, you're not a serious contender. Yeah, I understand the way the standings go. You go to MLB.com and you pop up the standings as you're listening to this. It's a muck. It's the muck of all mucks. Everybody's between 34 and 36 losses. So you look at that and you're like, well, the Mets are only a couple of games out. So if they were over 500 at 500, you wouldn't be saying this, Mike. And I'm right. But you have to figure out the way that baseball works. And we've never really had a muck that hovered around the below 500 mark in a playoff scenario. That one time it almost happened was ironically the first season of the three-division format and the expanded into the wild card in 94, the strike season, when I believe it was Seattle and Texas were significantly below 500 before the strike hit. And it was very likely that one of those teams with a losing record would win the division. Even worse, we've never really seen that. We've never seen that. I mean, yeah, you've had times, we've brought up 1973 in the past where an 83, 82 win team, like that 73 Mets team makes the postseason. Was it the Twins won 80-something games, 85 games in 87, made it to the postseason. Again, not the tournament that it is today, but they made a run and won a championship in 87 with that club, which, you know, year after the Mets who won the championship, won 108 games. So, you know, you look at this club and you could understand the position where Cohen and Stearns are still saying, hey, look, it's June 9th. I could start ripping this thing apart now, but unless somebody's really going to give me something that I want, and you would hope they're beginning to scout and understand what could be out there, why would I just dump and give guys away? A little bit different last year when you had Verlander and Scherzer, guys that are Hall of Famers, the interest was there. There was probably an inkling that both were about to decline steeply, because think about it, I don't think either one, obviously Scherzer's been hurt all year, Verlander's not nearly the same pitcher, he's about league average, would garner the same package that they got last year, where you got potentially, I'm not saying all-stars, but contributors potentially to a lineup on an everyday basis in Gilbert and Acuna, and who the hell knows what's going to happen with Clifford down the road. He's still a ways away. You know, with the development of the farm system, there's less of a sense of urgency to buy down contracts or jump at tearing the thing apart, you know, to acquire assets, you know, that may be a couple of years away. And, you know, I have no problem with these guys continuing to push through and saying, hey, this might be the mediocre of mediocre wild card races. We may sneak in at some point and get lit up. And even if you make it in the tournament through the wild card round, if the Phillies and the Dodgers are waiting for you, after watching the Phillies, how well they're playing, how well constructed they are from a pitching standpoint. And even though their bullpen blew it today, they still have some decent arms coming out of the bullpen. With Trey Turner not in the lineup and coming back, they're scoring runs. Think about what that's going to look like when he comes back. You know, is that really a prize? Well, pushing and getting into the tournament is always a prize to me. As long as it's not done irresponsibly, as long as the Mets don't delude themselves into holding on to Pete Alonso or J.D. Martinez or Jeff McNeil or a couple of the veteran pitchers, or even, I don't think anybody would potentially, unless he starts really looking like the old Edwin Diaz, give you something without you taking money off the contract to take them. And that's the thing, you know, why gift these players who have upside with money, especially when they have multiple years left on their deal, McNeil, Diaz being a couple of those options, when potentially they could be useful. Maybe they're not going to perform at the level you want them to, or certainly how they did in 2022, but they are useful. So there may be a bit of fool's gold here with what we see. The Mets have won, you know, 4 of 5. They split the London series. They did not look good for a majority of the game after they were down 3-0. They were down late. They were down in the ninth inning. You know, the Phillies kind of handed them a couple of runs there in the ninth. The Mets didn't execute the best with the bases loaded. But in any event, like I said, I wrote about this. I said it. Yes, I believe at this point, I don't see this team making the postseason. Okay, I'm not going to sit here and go and give you, at this point anyway, schedule or predictions or say, hey, if they get to this point by July 1st, they're in it and whatnot. This is, again, I think they were 10 or 11 under in 2019. This is a team that just has to go out and try to win 2 out of 3 every series, try to win 6 out of 10 every 10 games, hopefully run off a 7 and 3, 8 and 2 span at some point to really catch ground. And eventually when you get to 500, stay there and grow from there. And if the Cubs and the Padres and the Giants, because I'll assume the Braves will continue to play at their 94, 95 win pace, even without Strider, even without Acuna. If those teams still meander around 500 and don't take off, then yeah, you know, maybe come July 15th, as we start to look towards 2 weeks before the trade deadline, then maybe my tune will change and say, hey, not about to go and trade a top, 10 prospect or top 5 prospect to make a run at this. But if there's a bullpen arm out there to acquire, or, you know, some kind of starting pitcher that's reasonably priced, a veteran, you know, maybe you consider that. Stearns considers that to make this season look like what he had talked about all winter, which is a team that can go into September and compete for a postseason spot. I'm not counting on that. I still feel, even with today's win, this team lacks. They're disjointed. They lack a lot. You know, their offense is inconsistent. The closer, he may be back on Tuesday. Who the heck knows what you're going to get until he shows you a sample size of execution of his pitches, command of his pitches, and potentially an uptick of velocity from the 95 to 97 to 97 to 99. You have to assume that he's going to be a roller coaster act. And, you know, you have Daniel Nunez and maybe Garrett and Diekman and Ottavino, who struggled. And I think a lot of that is not a coincidence that those guys have struggled as Diaz has fallen off the cliff and essentially, even though he's not hurt now for the year like last year, put them in the same predicament that they were in last year. You know, this is not chopped liver, these guys in the bullpen. So, you know, I think my advice, and it's really what I talked about over at Beyond the Mic, and if you're not a subscriber, I always say, get on board. You know, there's weeks where we have a lot. There's weeks where we don't have as much. But I think every time you get something, I try to give you a complimentary point of view to what I give you here on Sundays and on the show. You know, I think, well, let's enjoy the fool's gold while it lasts. I mean, the baseball season's a long season. And I don't get the sense that Stearns and Cohen are in the clouds, deluded into believing that everything's okay. You know, Cohen has been pretty pragmatic and said, look, you know, it's a long season. We'll see what happens. He's never said, hey, we're going to continue to invest more and more in this roster in a big way by hook or by crook. I don't care if we're 8 games out in August, we're going to push for it. I think part of what you look at with this team, and it might even ring more true this year, is that last year I still felt they could have made a move, and Buck was actually on with Terry Collins on his podcast a couple of weeks ago and said as much to Terry as well, and I really think after they had won that game at Yankee Stadium. But at that point, the point of the career that Scherzer and Verlander were at and kind of where the farm system was at, the Mets felt it was in their best interest to take whatever assets they have and flip them into something of value. And look, between the haul they got from the Marlins, Jeremy Rodriguez from Arizona for Tommy Pham, what they got for Verlander and Scherzer, it worked. These are guys that potentially either will be pieces in a trade that will help a Mets team that's contending down the road, or some kind of piece on the big league roster in the next couple of years, in the next, you know, 2 to 3 years potentially. So you can't say because they're under 500 that they look and smell very similar to last year that it's the same. It's not. So I still say, look, as you get closer, if you're still under 500, even if you're in the race, quote unquote, mathematically, 3-4 games out, I'm going to stand by, hey, hear what other teams have to say. Because as each day goes by, as every time I see Pete Alonso more and more, I'm not so sure it's the same Pete Alonso. I'm not so sure we'll ever see the old Pete Alonso again. I'm not so sure we'll ever see the old McNeil again. I think JD Martinez is still a professional hitter, but his best days are behind him. He's only going to get worse. And yeah, you're stuck probably with Lindor and Nimmo. Not that you're stuck with Nimmo or Lindor, but you have them on contracts that are not easily tradable without money coming back, you know, out of your pocket to send over and then potentially it balanced out. So, you know, that's not necessary at this point. You don't want to eat those contracts. Same thing with Diaz. You know, maybe you could get something for some of the veteran relievers or whatnot, or a Quintana or Manaea. But really, what are you going to get? How much are you going to get? You're going to get a lottery low-level ticket prospect? Is that really worth it just to give somebody else or gift them a piece for their run? When maybe if it's that kind of like 2, 3, 4 games, just have fun with it. So as long as you're responsible and you say, hey, I've done my due diligence on the market. I've heard what's out there. You know, July 30th is going to be here in a blink of an eye. And it's nothing that I can't draft. It's nothing that's going to make my system better. It's not giving me a piece that's controllable and affordable that'll help me on the big league roster now into next year and in the near term. If that's the case, then you know what? Keep the band together. Try to win as many games as you can. And, you know, if some of these guys leave as free agents, Quintana, Pete, whatever, you get your draft picks depending if you do the qualifying offer. And away you go. And that's that. So, I want to caution everybody. This London series was fun. It was fun to see, you know, the good people of the United Kingdom get into the game of baseball. Yes, I know it was probably majority Philadelphia fans. That's to be expected. A team on an 86 Mets, 93 Phillies kind of run. That kind of energy, having a recent World Series appearance, is going to lend people to invest what disposable travel income they do have on, during these thorny economic times, to go to London, not a cheap trip, and see the team. I think Mets fans, and I've said this, this is why this season is so critically important for Stearns, and competing and winning, I think, in Cohen's mind is so important, because there's a certain apathy around the fan base. There's a certain amount of, I can't take this anymore. There's a certain amount of, I need to take a vacation from the Mets. And customers that take a vacation from your product or your brand are not customers that you want to count on that will be back in the future. Usually Mets fans will be back, but you never want to assume that all will be well forever. It's a dangerous thing. So, you know, the more Cohen keeps this team relevant by keeping the stars on the roster, by trying to see if there's any kind of run they can make, similar to what we saw in 2019, and perhaps with the kind of front office they have and the resources they have, unlike 2019, where they really couldn't invest and they ran out of gas late in the season, maybe this team could go and win 86, 87 games. I mean, that team did it too. They did. I mean, and they were in a similar type of hole. And in some ways, this roster is better. Maybe the starting pitching was better on that roster, but I think this roster has some components of it that are a lot better. So, fun game, fun series, a lot of energy at the ballpark. And, you know, what an end to the game with Luis Torrens making a great play there to get the double play and get the Mets out of a thorny situation. So, you know, that's where we're at. That's kind of the state of the union. Let's just have fun with this. Understand what you're seeing is still not something that you should count on and get excited about, in the sense where this is a team ready to turn the corner. This is truly night in and night out. Let's just have fun watching the game. Let's see how the guys do. Let's see how some of the kids that are in the lineup develop. The Vientos, the Beatties, if he's ever back in there. Christian Scott, Nunez out of the bullpen. Maybe there'll be some others joining them. And let's just let this team prove itself over the next 4 to 6 weeks that they can get themselves to 500, normalize themselves, and then maybe be in a muck with Chicago and San Diego and San Francisco and so on and so forth. Now, it could all be, you know, San Diego and Chicago start running 9 out of 10, and they put themselves on a better pace, more of a 90-win pace, then the Mets are in trouble. Because the Mets have not played 580 baseball in 2 years. What makes you think they could do it now? And, you know, you look at them getting back to 500 with 17 games the rest of the month. You know, they'd have to go something like 12-5 to even sniff 500. That's 700 baseball, 13-4. They haven't played that in a long time. I don't even know if they're capable of it. They are not, in my opinion, without a dominant closer like Diaz coming back, hopefully on Tuesday, and doing his part. So, anyway, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Anthony Wooten of the Transatlantic Sports Podcast, he's joining me from the UK from London. He was covering the game this weekend, and he's also a dad who has young kids who are becoming baseball fans. So what better person to talk about how baseball is doing? Did the Mets and Phillies do their part to grow the game in Europe this weekend than someone who covers sports, has seen how the NFL has done it, and also has a couple of young kids who are impressionable and are potential future baseball customers and maybe Mets fans. So you're listening to the Talking Mets podcast. We'll be back with more right after this.